If I think we're on, welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our May podcast coming to you on the 32nd day of the month of May here, aka June 1st.
We were supposed to record Saturday. Chad was only 48 hours late.
We were supposed to record this a couple days ago. Unfortunately, one of us kind of, who is in control of the Zoom podcast we are on here, didn't do it. And I'll blame Zoom because it totally has a new system now in light of everything that's going on in the world. Let's just blame Zoom. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, though, joined by David Griggs over there, Joby Fortson coming to us from a brand new location, John Titel coming to us from a semi-brand new location over there. I guess let me start out by, it has been, I think our last show we did was probably towards the end of March, not long after the college basketball season was canceled. And let me just ask each of you how you're doing, because we are in an entirely different world than we were in even those 45 days ago or so when we did our last podcast. Titel, let me start with you. How you doing there? And I think you're in the D.C. area, correct?
Yes, 1 mile north of the White House, enjoying my 7 p.m. curfew tonight by locking myself up tight. I'm healthy and employed and alive, so I got some things going for me. But I have this dream that, like, Virginia is still the champion of the NCAA, so I don't know what the heck's going on.
Joey, that's good segue right into you, being a Virginia alum here.
I love that, Titel. Thank you so much. Well, I've learned, same here. I'm, safe and sound, employed, family safe and sound. You know, that's obviously takes precedence over everything else. But on the sports world, I know who Timo Werner is, you know, from the Bundesliga and I guess, you know, I've reignited my fandom of NASCAR. So,
well, Joby, you know, we've got to be ready for rooting for the KC Dino. I think NC Dinos in the Korean Baseball League. I mean, that's my team right now.
I'm now waiting with bated breath for the EPL to be back, and so, because Major League Baseball most certainly cannot get their act together. It is sad. Sad.
Lee Del Vecchio not with us tonight. Avid Liverpool fan. I wish the EPL would shut down just because I don't want him to be happy.
Well, and David, I am a Scouser as well. Though the funniest post I saw was by a Manchester United fan. Manchester United 20 titles. COVID-19. Liverpool 18. So,
we are in brand new territory that we have never been in before, in not only my lifetimes but lifetimes of most of the people that are watching us here. And David, let me throw it over to you real quick before we get into the meat of what we want to discuss today here. How are you doing there? And did we ever get you even out of the puppet bunker? I don't know.
I got out.
Okay,
it was not easy. Everybody just sort of left me down there in Dallas, but yeah, I got out. I'm still not employed. I'm still facing charges that you said not to talk about those on the air again. No. But relatively speaking, I'm actually doing pretty well. What a year our country is having.
And we're going to stay away from the political things here. We want to keep this upbeat. I know we do wish our best to everybody, make sure that they stay healthy and safe there with the pandemic and with the protests and the rioting and the looting that's been going on. But we want to talk in this podcast really about the college basketball world. And we're going to start by crossing our fingers and hope we actually have a 2020-2021 college basketball season. But let's kind of assume we're going to have one in some form or another, whether there be fans in the stands or not, that there's going to be something. And we've got a bunch of things we want to discuss here. And one of the things we do discuss around this time of year is we discuss coaching changes. For example, David, let me start off with you on that. There's been quite a few major coaching changes. We've already been announced, correct?
Yeah, most notably, the one I'll talk about is Wake Forest. You may recall a while ago, there once upon a time, Wake Forest was pretty good. Dino Gaudio was the coach. They actually rose to number one in the whole country, number one, you know, a number one ranking. And it wasn't like a preseason number one that wasn't live up to. They got there later in the year. He went to two NCAA tournaments, earned a protected seed, although they went out early that year in an upset in the round of 64. They still got a protected seed. His third and final year there, went to the NCAA tournament again, won a game, went to the round of 32, and they fired him. They brought in Bezdelic from Colorado. What a great move that was. Is that not the worst administrative decision ever made when it comes to coaching? And they've basically stunk ever since, but they made a fantastic hire. Danny Manning, I thought, was a good hire. He had done really well at Tulsa. It looked like, at least for a year or two, that he was going to get Wake rolling, but he never really did. I like Danny Manning. I hope that he gets another coaching opportunity. I believe that he will. It's just that it's very, very hard to win at Wake.
It's hard to win the ACC if you're not North Carolina, Duke, Virginia, kind of, isn't it?
Yeah. Or Louisville.
Yeah, there's a handful of ACC teams, but somebody's got to take those losses, David, don't they? And that's Ben Wake, among a few other
teams. Yeah.
Boston College, but
and after all that, the guy's name, I know who he is. He come from East Tennessee State, did a fantastic job there. I kind of hate that ETSU lost him and that they didn't get to have the opportunity to play in the postseason and maybe win a game in the round of 64, but a really solid hire by Wake. And is that what started the downfall? Like, was that the first sign that things were kind of upside down, Wake making a good basketball move?
Well, you talk about Steve Forbes, of course. Yes, Joby, you are an ACC guy. So what do you think about this Steve Forbes?
A guy
we loved at East Tennessee State.
Yeah.
But a huge jump up.
We're going to see. You know, I think Kevin Cates has done pretty well at NC State.
He has from Wilmington, yeah.
Yes.
And it's similar. I view the moves as somewhat similar. I think the style can work. I think he'll focus a lot on the defensive side in particular going forward, which I think you have to do if you're not Duke or North Carolina, or have that one, that superstar that can light up the scoreboard. So I think he can find some. I think he has the ability to regroup. They've got the most disappointing thing about Danny Manning was the inability to fill the cupboard. You would think Danny Manning could walk in to basically say, "Look at my NCAA championship. Danny and the Miracles. I can take you all the way. I had a successful NBA career. Barring injury." And you would think, so I can help you get to the league. He never really excelled and got the recruits. Thus, just playing straight up with lesser talent against North Carolina, et cetera, you're going to lose. You have to have something unique. That's what Virginia's done, with the defensive side of the ball, et cetera. You have to have something unique to actually win. I think Forbes can bring that. I do think he can. And so and that's why I've seen Keats do a little bit at NC State. That's why I do the comparison. So I'm hopeful for him that they can maybe make a run, at maybe the tournament. I mean, the ACC has the potential, just like the Big Ten last year, to have those heavy number of teams in. Maybe he can do it there, but he's going to have to reload the cupboard a little bit to do that.
Well, I think he will. One of the things about Wake Forest the last 2 years, I think they would have finished – in the top half of the SoCon, maybe fourth or fifth.
The SoCon's been really good last few years, so that's actually not too much of an insult. I don't know.
In Western Carolina, maybe.
Tytel, let me ask you about another guy here, and I'm kind of surprised you this with, but maybe it's because I've been a little bit here and a little bit under the radar in terms of the school, but our good friend, a guy we've loved for years, Tim Clouse, due to health reasons, did step down at Iona. And in steps, Richard Pitino.
It's fascinating. I never thought we'd see him again. Boy, was I wrong. It'll be interesting to see which Pitino gets more wins next year. I think the early favorite is Richard, not Rick, but we'll see. He's proven himself. He can recruit McDonald's All-Americans, although to bigger schools than Iona. He can win NCAA championships, although some of them have been vacated. When he's on, he is one of the best coaches in America. So it's going to be fascinating to see how he fits at a small school in New York that doesn't prioritize basketball like a Power 5 program does. I think he'll be good and the team will be good, but I don't think they're going to contend for anything serious anytime soon.
He had a pretty good gig where he was. I'm surprised he wanted back into the college game at that level, to be honest.
Well, you know, he did build the program at UMass. And so that's what the question is, can he – will he have the tools to
replicate? You're thinking of Cal.
I don't know if he will.
Patino played for UMass. He never coached there.
Providence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Providence. Calipari and Patino.
I want to go over just a couple of the coaching changes of note here. First of all, very interesting. Ty, let me go back to you because I know you've got some Arizona ties here. Dan Marley out at Grand Canyon. Drew in his place.
Yes, he comes in kind of an ugly end to the Thunder Dan experience in Phoenix. So I'm interested to see how that's going to play out legally, but that's a separate conversation for a separate show. In steps Bryce Drew. He was very good at Valpo. He averaged 25 wins a year and made the postseason 5 out of 5 years there from 2012 to 2016. Vandy, not so much, but as we said, somebody like Wake has to lose to all of those good ACC teams. Guess who the Commodores did? They lost to all those good SEC teams from 2017 through 2019, including an 0 for 18 in 2019. Took a year off and did some broadcasting. We know he can coach. I think he was responsible for bringing in multiple McDonald's guys to Vandy, not that it ever worked out for him. So if he can get a couple guys to go to Phoenix, I think that they can compete.
Yeah, and a couple of guys have took a few years off. David, let me throw it over to you. Andy Kennedy, suddenly the head coach at UAB after a couple of years of broadcasting out of the for the SEC.
Yeah, Andy Kennedy, good coach. I was really impressed with the one and only year that he had at Cincinnati. He was dealt, the five cards he were basically dealt was a 2, a 3, a 5, a 7, and a 9. What the hell are you supposed to do with that? But he ended up nearly making the NCAA tournament. It was a little bit controversial that they were left out. They really, really, played over their heads that year. And at Ole Miss, I mean, when you look at it on the surface, he didn't do anything phenomenally great there, but they were certainly a lot better with him than they were in the time before he got there. So, you know, I thought that he had a pretty good run. I think UAB is a pretty good fit for him. I believe he can really do well there and win there. So, good luck to him. Glad to see him back in the game.
And Joby, I know you were you are the opposite of a Texas A&M fan, I believe. Billy Gillespie, suddenly the head coach at a new team moving up to D1, Tarleton State, on the way up to the WAC. And here's a name coach for a team nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah, well, and I think the Billy Gillespie that was the Billy Gillespie was the Kentucky Billy Gillespie. Mm-hmm. I'm not sold that I feel like he luck boxed a little bit there at A&M back in the day, and he took his shot when it was given to him, even though he wasn't really prepared for it because it was his shot. I'm not saying he'll do awful at Tarleton, but yeah, the question is, you know, Tarleton has some structure there. They are a known entity within the state of Texas, more than like Incarnate Word, for instance. So he might get some low-level talent out of Houston and Dallas areas, which can produce talent. And he can, the guy can recruit. So we'll see if he can develop something there. I don't know. I'm a little more skeptical than I am with the other hires we've mentioned tonight.
I kind of like this move for both. Billy Gillespie, as you might recall, actually turned UTEP around, did pretty well there. That opened the door to A&M. He kind of got them rolling. Kentucky is a disappointment, and I'm not saying that let's dismiss that, but the guy does have a track record of elevating programs that don't have much of a basketball history. I know A&M kind of does now, but before him, they really did not.
Well, yeah.
Buzz wouldn't have taken the job maybe if there was never a Gillespie.
That's before we go much further, I want to join, welcome one more person to our podcast here, our good friend Mike Chobb. Sorry, Mike, I did not. This whole new Zoom thing, Zoom has totally changed and requires me to admit everybody into the meeting. I did not see you there. I apologize. Yeah. But Mike, how are you doing out there? Sure. And are you at a football game right now? Or
yeah, that
game?
Looks like it. Yeah. Okay. I mean, the social distancing has been lifted.
In Michigan of all states. Yeah.
Hey, the governor's loosening the restrictions. Now we can have dining at the restaurants and we can have groups of 100 people outside.
Yeah. And yeah. I guess that's where you got there. About it looks like there's about 100 people there, Mike.
100 people in your section, maybe. Yeah. But but Mike, welcome. We're just getting going here, and we were just discussing some of the coaching changes. But I think that kind of leads into the next subject we want to hit, which was we were just talking about Billy Gillespie coming to Tarleton State, and the there are a few moves coming up. Most, I guess, we have a few teams new to D1 coming in next year.
Aren't there a ton of changes this year?
A fair amount. I think we've got eight changes guaranteed at the moment. We've got is Bellarmine moving up from D2 mm-hmm. into the Atlantic Sun.
UCSD.
Dixie State and yeah. Charleston State moving up to the WAC. UC San Diego, not to be accused of San Diego or San Diego State, this is UC San Diego moving into the Big West. Bakersfield moving from the WAC to the Big West. We've got a swap here, I guess, with Kansas City going from the WAC to the Summit, Fort Wayne going from the Summit to the Horizon. A little bit of news say that, I don't know if it's going to be next year or the year after, Florida A&M talking about switching from the MEAC to the SWAC. But I guess
I don't understand that one. I really – does this mean
– Yeah, feels like a downgrade.
Yeah. Well, I don't – travel-wise, it isn't any better. It's at best the same, mm-hmm. and – like the historical rivalry with Bethune-Cookman, they've always been in the MEAC. I don't get that one.
I think travel gets worse because Florida, FAMU is in northern Florida, and you've got the North Carolina schools in the MEAC. You have, Houston. Yeah.
Whereabouts Florida's Bethune-Cookman?
Cookman's in Daytona.
Daytona,
is that north.
Yeah. They're about, an hour apart? Maybe.
Yeah, it's not that far apart. That was one of the big rivalries. I assume they're going to continue some form of that rivalry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I guess the biggest news, the only really name brand school moving conferences is the big one. It's the University of Connecticut moving from the American.
Right.
Not to the Big Ten. Kyle Lamb, you owe me some money, but instead to the Big East. Tatel, let me bring you back in here on this move. Connecticut to the Big East. How do you think that's going to play out here in terms of basketball? I mean, if we could talk football and Connecticut's lack of any competitiveness at length at some other point, but can Connecticut get back to the level they'd been in just, a few years back at the end of the old Big East, now that they're in the new Big East?
Can they get back to the Kevin Ollie level of winning championships?
I didn't want to go there, but...
You're the one who said it years ago. I think that they are going to have some rough going at first just because I've been impressed by the Big East over the past few years. I've watched a lot of games in downtown D.C. where the Hoyas were losing mostly and winning some to the rest of the Big East. I think that the future looks bright if they can recruit with the other Big East powers, but I don't think they're going to contend with the studs of the conference anytime soon.
Mike, what do you think? Do you agree with him that they think it's going to take some time for Connecticut to get back to the, maybe I'll call it the Jim Calhoun era of success instead of
I agree because the expectations are naturally going to be raised because of what they've done in the past. But unfortunately, that doesn't help you going forward. And, they've got to upgrade their town. And like John was saying, there's a lot of good teams in the Big East. I think Villanova's pretty good. I mean, they're decent.
Had a few good years.
They're all right. Well,
couple championships, that's all. Yeah.
Including one at Michigan's expense.
I got sort of a different take on this, and so I want to share it because mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious to get your all's feedback. I don't see what this does for the Big East. The Big East, in a down year, was sending five teams to the NCAA tournament. That's half its membership. It was routinely six or seven. They'd won national championships. There were years where like nine different teams would have been ranked in the top 25. Last year, did all 10 of them get in there at one point? I don't know if Providence did, but Yeah. Number one overall in the RPI when we had it. Number over, you know, the net was number one. You can't get more first than first. And it just seemed like everything was going as well as it ever had in any sort of lineup in that league. I know that it didn't have maybe the history or the nostalgia of the old Big East, but I thought they were doing just fine. And why change anything? Nothing against UConn, but now one of the things is that it's two less out-of-conference games per school. Did they need to do it? Are they going to be noticeably better, or is it going to be like so many other conferences that we've seen? Once they've expanded, they were at best as good, and in most cases, not as good. The ACC, since it abandoned its 9-team format, has only once sent half the teams, where they used to do it all the time.
I got to say, David, you know, there is a logic here sometimes with some of these expansions for television markets. Being a Rutgers alum, obviously the Big Ten wanted Rutgers because Rutgers is just such a great college program, and not because of any television money that the New York market would have brought. But, you know,
76 Final Four.
But Connecticut doesn't bring a new market to the Big East. I mean, you've already got Providence, St. John's, and Seton Hall, all of the Big East. Mm-hmm. Joby, Connecticut brings nothing other than a name team that has stunk the last few years. No offense.
And this is, you're hitting it. What's scary, this is scary for
They would have been better going off to the Big Ten than they can get the Boston market.
I mean, this is scary for UConn, because we mentioned, the national title. We're starting to get to the point where recruits don't remember that.
We're there.
And so as such, UConn is at like a very tilting point where they could maybe regain their footing and come back up, kind of like, Syracuse went through a lull and, et cetera, and came back. There are teams that can come back from this with some tradition, but there are also teams like DePaul. There's teams, like St. John's, to use Big East teams, that could get buried, Georgetown right now, that could get buried in that conference very easily. They could be buried very easily in that conference because Calhoun's not walking back through that door. And
neither is Rip Hamilton.
Hamilton,
exactly Okafor. Right, Mike. And so they have to get their, for lack of a better word, they have to get their S together now. They don't have that time that Mike was talking about, to get their footing. I don't think they have – they have to hit the ground running in the Big East, or they are going to get steamrolled by the Creightons of the world.
Yeah, I do think Hurley is a really good coach. I think that it's a good move for UConn. I'm kind of opposite you. I'm not so sure what it brings to the Big East other than more of what it already had and didn't need, and maybe it's a little too much of it now. I loved it. Like 10 teams, double round robin, 18 games.
And can we discuss the elephant in the room here, that the civil conflict with University of Central Florida is now dead?
Yes. I mean, one of the great rivalries in the history of the sport is no longer a conference game.
We got a lot of stuff to discuss here, so I think maybe we should
Kansas will bring it back, David.
One other thing that we always like to talk about in the offseason, Tytel, let me bring you back in here, is what players are going pro, what players are not. I mean, I'm not certain where the NBA draft even stands at this point. I haven't even been paying that much attention. Maybe you have a little bit more, and you can give us a little bit of insight into this.
Sure. Back in April, I would say last month, since this is May 32nd, there was a list of 200-plus candidates declare early entry for the draft, which, as you know, there's only 60 players who actually get drafted during the two rounds of the draft. That is a lot of guys who are going to get undrafted.
And some seniors in there, right, too, that don't have to declare.
I certainly wish them all the best, and I hope the G League and Europe has space for them. Some of them, the way it works now, I believe, is you can declare by April whatever, and then you can sign with a certified agent. Yeah. You can guide you through the process. You can figure out where you stand, although the draft combine was postponed, so that certainly doesn't help. And then you have some point, it had been, I think, coming up like June 3rd, like Wednesday. I think that got pushed, where you can decide to go back to school if you want, as long as you haven't taken money and stuff like that. Some guys like Mac McClung, he announced that he was going pro, signed with a certified agent, changed his mind, went back to college, and then slid a little to the west to Texas Tech. Other guys like Precious Achiuwa at Memphis, coming off a great freshman year, signed with an agent, he's going to stay in the draft. What's amazing to me is that there's several great guys, like lottery talent, who didn't play even a full season of college basketball. James Wiseman, 3 games last year. Aaron Nesmith at Vandy, 14. Cole Anthony and Tyrese Halliburton at Carolina and Iowa State, respectively, 22. Very small sample sizes, which is why the combine was going to be so important for these guys, or in-person workouts, which they can't do now. So these guys have lottery talent. I just don't know if I would trust them this year specifically.
Well, and that's a real interesting question. These guys that maybe only had a limited exposure in college, do they stay in the draft because there is no combine, because there is, you know, because there may not be a chance for these teams to really get a look, or do they take the chances? Hey, the team doesn't know that I may not be as good as you think I am, so maybe I should stay in the draft. Joby, maybe your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of times those, and it's especially the ones that Tytel mentioned, those without a ton of sample size, they're going to be told. The one good thing about what the NBA has done is they aren't blowing smoke up the kids. They aren't telling the kids exactly what they want to hear. I think most of the time, good decisions are made. Cole Anthony's still going to be drafted. You know, he's going to go. He's gone, and he's still going to be a number one pick. You know, and because the talent's there, but you're going to be looking at AAU footage, maybe a lot, and that sort of thing. But it will give, you know, tentativeness. I think the McClung example that Tytel references, and we've discussed Priam Nimhard from Florida, had almost a very similar – he hasn't decided his destination, but he has a very similar point of view. What I look at is what players are going to have huge impacts because on their decision affecting their team's outcome. And there are a few who are now pretty much dedicated to the draft that I think their decisions – will dramatically affect where they're – had they stayed, their teams. And we're still waiting on the fence. I mean, Baylor has to be ridiculously nervous with Teague and Butler. There is not a determination on what they will do. If Butler and Teague both come back, Baylor might be the number one team in the country. I mean, you can argue Villanova and some others. And Gonzaga sits in a similar position. But, yeah, I look at Baylor very closely – and the impact that Butler and Teague's decisions will have. That, if I'm a college basketball fan, I will be looking at their decisions very closely, just to name a pair.
And a lot of this is going to come down to when do these guys have to pull back? Because I don't know. I mean, maybe Mike and David, Mike, let me start with you. Any thoughts on this? I mean, last I heard was the NBA is looking to actually restart their season, at least with a playoff maybe in July, which means – we could be looking into late August by the time the NBA season is done. And you may have, you know, I thought NBA training camps for the next season start come to September. So, I mean.
Well, they would push the next season back to around Christmas.
Would they? Okay. Is that part? I haven't actually heard that part.
School,
but
you have to enroll in school.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
You still need these kids are going to have to make a decision at some point, and a draft is going to be held at some point. And all these colleges don't even know who's going to stay and who's going to go. And how do you prepare for next season like that?
Well,
Isaiah Livers would have declared a long time ago if it had been any other year. He would have decided. He would have decided by now.
Yeah. To answer your question, Chad, there really isn't an answer. Nobody really knows how to manage what's going on. The other issue is – are these kids coming back or not? What are their opportunities? And what is it going to look like here if they here being the university, if they do come back?
Dave, you know, let me throw that through kind of this segues into another question here that I kind of want to throw to you also is, you know, if I'm a player and I'm going to risk the chance that I contract COVID by playing on the court, wouldn't I rather go to the NBA and get paid for it at least? I mean, I don't know that I want to play for free right now if I could get a really bad illness by playing.
I mean, some people may look at it that way. Others might look at it in terms of, well, should I go into the NBA or come back to college to play? But what if I don't get to play? Or what if the season is altered in a way that doesn't benefit me? You know, whether it's a different format to where we're not traveling as much, which limits the number of showcase games, or it's not, you know, it's in front of limited fans. Maybe the arena is half full or a third full. It isn't quite the same atmosphere and excitement that I signed up for. I'm sure all those questions are kind of going through your mind. And the ultimate question is, what do you do about that? I don't know. We're kind of, I say we like I'm a part of it. I'm not. But I think a lot of people that make those types of decisions are kind of just going by the seat of their pants. It's kind of uncharted waters. There isn't really a how-to manual on how to restart everything.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a few NBA players, I don't recall the names, but Tytel, you may recall this a little better than I, you know, you follow the NBA more than I, who said, listen, if the choice is between playing a meaningless game somewhere down in Disney World to finish up the season or not playing at all, but there's a risk I could be on the court with somebody who may not know they're sick, but they are, I'd rather not play at all. And, you know, is that really being selfish or is that just being smart by saying, hey, I don't want to play a meaningless game in a meaningless situation?
It's smart. Damian Lillard was the one who
Damian
said
Lillard, it's thank
a meaningless game. He doesn't care about it, which my response was, well, you know, you're making, I think, the end of his contract, which he just re-signed a year ago, I think in the 24-25 season, he's due to make like $54 million. And it's just, it's a bad look when you have 20% unemployment for this multi-millionaire to say, oh, like, I don't want to play. My advice to him, donate it to the homeless community of Portland, Oregon, and become like a god if you can't even more. And what's sad is that he was having like a career year this year, and it sucks if he misses the playoffs, but if he finishes strong, he could put up like amazing stats. Not that he's going to be happy if he misses the playoffs, but I just wish that players would like play it out. It's also like if he sits
and they get
out
the testing, they'll get all the testing. They'll be taken care of.
Yeah, well, the key is
– Blake Snell, Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, these players will get all the testing. They don't have to worry about
the Bundesliga really has, and we'll see it with soccer, has laid out, in my opinion, a very good blueprint for what how to do this. If you're testing regularly and you're testing – you know, you catch it. The fact of the – you know, you catch if someone has got it and then quarantine them. You're not quarantining the whole – team if you've already pre-tested before everybody gets together. You know, you rigorously do it and not just once and say, oh, we're done. And it requires capacity of our healthcare system, and that, you know, I don't want to get into
But in the college game, it's not going to work.
College is – that's where we're going to be, and we're going to see football be the guinea pig on this. College is different. But, you know, we're talking about kids. I don't want to get in the whole kids back on campus fight and all that stuff. We'll save that for another time when we know more. But you know, at least in terms of how in a hopeful world will be, I truly believe they'll know that there's not – that the risk is minuscule if it's done right. The if of obviously is huge and 5,000 pounds.
It's a huge if, Joby. I can understand, hey, Duke may be able to test every player before every game. Virginia, your school might be able to test every player before every game.
Power five.
Can Alabama State do that? Right. Can Texas Southern do that? Can a D2 school do that? Can an NAIA school do that? No. Right.
And the other thing about it is you can't
get the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah, you can't move players into a hotel and just you know sequester them there the way you can with the pro leagues. I mean, they have to go to class. They're going to interact, and it cracks me up when I hear these college administrators talk about, well, we're going to have social distancing. And I'm like, yes, and we also have no drink, no alcohol rules that everybody obviously follows. Like, if I'm not saying don't have those rules, but if your expectation is that people are actually going to follow those students, you're insane.
the key, David, will be if you have, for instance, regular testing, you know, regular testing. It's not every day. But if you have regular testing, you're going to have a situation, at least at the Power Five level for football. All right, so football, you know, you're going to have a situation, and this will be for basketball too, is the night before, get a test. If the test comes back, you're not playing. you don't have to, if you've been doing this regularly, you don't have to quarantine everybody in that particular case, because you got a negative test back, and if they've been exposed, it's within 24 hours, and you can't, the disease doesn't go in 24 hours. It takes a few days, you know, even if you're asymptomatic. So, you know, there's a way to do it, but you're hitting on the very point is you then, college students are going to be different in their social behaviors because they're not getting paid.
Ty, let me get back to this here, because I think it's beyond that. You look at Patrick Ewing, just got out of the hospital, head coach at Georgetown. He had COVID-19.
Okay.
I mean, from what everything I hear, he's going to be okay. He's going to be fine, from at least what we've heard so far. But, you know, I mean, what happens then? So suddenly you find out that a coach who'd been around players, his entire team for 2 or 3 days, had this. I mean, this is the fear I have about even having a next season. You know, what if some of this happens and suddenly we've got to shut our team down for 2 weeks?
I interviewed a couple of the COVID-19 advisory panel guys, and who were fantastic. They made it sound like it's going to be just a whole new thing. Kind of like Joby was saying, like, that testing is a huge part of it. And like, you can test at certain parts of the way, but you have to keep doing it the whole time. And I asked them, like, well, how are you going to change like the bench in the locker room? And he said, well, maybe we'll use multiple locker rooms, which seems insane to me, because like, how do you give a pregame speech if six of your guys are here, six of your guys are there? But the key is to physically get spread out as much as you can. So maybe on the bench, you don't see 10 guys sitting next to each other. Maybe it's like one, and they go back like 10 rows or something.
How does that help if you're going to be this close on the court where you're actually sitting on each other and sweating at each other? I'm sorry.
Good point.
Yeah.
There is the potential that they will restart everything and it will go disastrously wrong at the midway point. And not to go there. Well, okay. I'm going to go there. I'm not saying this definitively because it's certainly not what I want. How important is this really? Like, would it really kill us to do without it for a year? And should we consider not having sports at all if it's A, going to be dangerous, and B, possibly going to create a situation where we have to stop midway anyway?
Just do it right. Just do it right.
Well, you do it if you.
But if all of a sudden something bad happens, you pull back, you restart. But don't just give up. It's like, well, you know, no, we're just going to give up. No sports. And no, that's. I don't accept that at any way, shape, or form. What it is do it right. If you have to reset, reset. I mean, you know.
But Joby, isn't there a difference between a professional versus an amateur game, a game where the players are not getting paid.
It is, you can make an argument, but you're also talking a situation where most of the players desperately not just want to play, but need to play in many cases. You're going to see a split this year already in college football. The SEC is playing. It's playing. And the Alabama players who have true NFL aspirations desperately need that tape to be drafted. And they are going to play, and they want to play. You're putting their lives at risk if you don't play, their financial lives at risk. So SEC is playing. Big 12, if you read what Bowlesby said, they're playing. You know,
you mean nutty?
Yeah, okay. No, I don't think it's nutty.
You missed the whole Twitter thing about his signature. His signature,
right.
Nutty, but yeah. I'll let you go ahead.
No, in the Pac-12, Cal State, the schools have already said we're not in attendance this year. University of California system is probably not far behind. Already, TCU is talking to Alabama to replace USC, who's a private institution, by the way. In Dallas, in Jerry World, an empty Jerry World, I might add, to kick off the year. And so it's because you have TCU's willing to go and Alabama's willing to go. And so you might see, I truly believe this could be the instance. And I think the NCAA, by being hands-off, has done all that they can, because you can't force a yes, go ahead, and you can't force a no, you can't. So the NCAA is I'm not an NCAA fan, but they're kind of in a no-win situation here. You could see a situation where some of the Power Five, because they can afford the testing, they can afford to do it right, they say, okay, see ya, bye. We're going to create our own darn thing because we need the money, you know, from the – they're dependent on the TV money. And
it might not even be – well – it might not even be up to that. Like, I mean, if the states shut it down during a second wave, then it isn't even really up to the NCAA or the school.
Yeah.
The other thing about empty stadiums, I don't really give a damn about the fans. I mean, like, whether the stadiums are full or not, the main concern is the players. And unless they storm the court or something, they're not in contact with the fans anyway. So if they want to let them come. I don't even really care if the stadium's empty or not. That's doing nothing to protect the players. So anyway, you know.
Well, I guess on that note, that covers most topics we wanted to. I had on my list at least, but let me kind of run through each of you here. As if there's anything else you want to discuss tonight or anything else that's on your mind about the whole state of college athletics and the world as it is. And Mike, let me start with you. Any other things that you wanted to bring up for the evening?
I don't have anything new to add.
That's fine. We can get the show done with Joby. How about you?
All right. Have a statistic from last year. It's pretty fun. It goes in the category. It goes in the category of death and taxes. What else is true? The top five returning players in defensive efficiency in the ACC are top returning players are Jay Huff, Virginia. Kihei Clark, Virginia, Thomas Walden Tensai, Virginia, Cody Statman, Virginia, and Casey Morsell, Virginia. Death, taxes, and Virginia is going to have a good defense.
The top five players are all from Virginia?
Top five efficiency, KenPom efficiency players are all from Virginia. I've never seen anything like it.
Even more reason to not have a season next season.
Might have been, I'm not sure if Huff or Diakite was number one, but the player leaving, you know, was maybe the best of all.
Before we get to you real quickly, Joe, I got to throw this up here.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's Bob Bowlsby's signature.
Yes, there it is.
Nutty. He's nutty. Okay, I got to throw it out there.
Sorry, I had no idea.
That is how he signs his documents. I don't know what the hell that is, but it's Titel. Let me throw it over to you.
I got to follow that. That's fantastic. Yeah. I know we're not getting political. I just wanted to give a shout-out to Seth Towns, who had quite a busy week. He graduated from Harvard on Thursday. After 2 years of injuries, he was an amazing basketball player for the Crimson. He's now at Ohio State, where he was at a protest on Friday and got briefly detained by the local police officers during a protest in Columbus. Happy to report he's fine. He's out of the jail, if he was even in the jail, back at his apartment and healing, and should be fine for Chris Holton this fall. But very excited to see a college basketball player voicing his opinion at an important weekend of social justice in America, and thankful that nothing bad happened because he could have been one of the many, many unfortunate victims of this tragedy.
Just want to send our best out to everybody out there. David, how about you?
Yeah, to build on that just a little bit, about a year or so ago when we had, I think, a couple videos, it was two or three, or maybe it was even more than that, of passengers getting physically pulled off and removed from flights that were overbooked, and how angry it made people and how ridiculous they thought it was. Imagine if you saw those and you thought it was outrageous. Imagine how a lot of people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds feel when they see the videos they see about police brutality and a lot of the issues that are facing that. And the reason I bring that up is that a lot of the young men and the kids that play the games that we love to watch come from those backgrounds. A lot of them are sort of really angry right now. They're hurting, they're frustrated. On top of everything else, they lost their season. We've been locked down, and now this is going on. So to kind of give you an idea of where a lot of these guys are personally, just something to think about. I also kind of say, you hear on both sides, well, it's just a few bad apples. A lot of the people that are defending the protesters are saying you can't really judge all of the protesters because of the looting. It's just a few bad apples, but yet they won't give that same consideration to the police. A lot of the police will say, well, you can't judge the police brutality. It's just a few bad apples, but not give that same consideration to the protesters. In a way, I think that they're both right. I know people that are cops that I think are wonderful that I really hate that they're having to go through what they're going through now. And I know a lot of people on the other end that are protesting that are really angry, and I hate it for them as well. It's just, maybe there is something in common if we can just kind of take the time to think about it and empathize a little bit. And I hope we come out of the COVID soon. I hope we come out of the unrest soon. And God, if we ever needed sports, maybe it's now.
And I can't agree with that more. And you know, it's tough to follow what you just said, David. I just want to spend a moment, I guess, still kind of on a bit of a down note, I guess, here. Just as I mentioned here, we did lose in the past about 8 or 9 days ago one of the great head coaches of all time in the sport, in Eddie Sutton. Yeah. He passed away back on May 23rd. His numbers, 806 college wins, over 890 total wins between junior college and college. Multiple Final Fours, Southwest, Big Eight, Big 12 championships and tournaments, titles. And so just, you know, one of the greats of college basketball. We did lose. But on all that note here, I do want to thank everybody for having joined us for everything here. And we do want to continue to wish you all that you stay safe, stay healthy, be careful out there, especially if you're in a city that might be subject to some unrest. Just make certain you stay somewhere safe. And we will continue to keep you updated on everything going on here in Hoops HD. I know, Tytel, you've been posting multiple interviews, and I'm sure there's going to be more to come here. And all kinds of content we're going to have across the off season. We'll probably be back real soon with our June podcast, right?
In fact,
it's June already. Look at that.
Yeah, we'll be back tomorrow with the June podcast.
We will be having a June podcast here in the next few weeks. Joy, happy May 31st, 32nd, whatever it is to everybody. But on behalf of Joby Fortson, John Tytel up here, Mike Chan, David Griggs down there in the bottom row, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and take care, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon.